Best Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, here with my fantastic host and business partner, Al McDonald. Al, what are you saying?
As always, looking forward to a great day of podcast. Always love meeting some new guests and hearing their story. And today is going to be no exception.
Yeah, agreed. Well, today we're thrilled to welcome Jocelyn Beaulieu. I hope I didn't butcher your name, Jocelyn. Head of People and Operations at Koru. So first, a big thank you to Amanda Small for connecting us. What a fantastic introduction. Jocelyn, so great to have you.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. And yes, thank you to Amanda, because that intro over a year ago has led to some great conversations since then. So really happy to be here.
Agreed. And I want to share a quick story with our audience. So last year, I'm at the Tech Talent North event, sitting with Amanda, and I'd become friends with Amanda. And you walk in, and Amanda immediately turns to me and says, "You need to meet Jocelyn." So I introduced myself, and that moment there kicked off what is now a great LinkedIn connection, what I would call a friend, and a series of meetups at various events. And I think it's a perfect example of how simply putting yourself out there, attending events, having conversations can lead to these amazing connections. So my advice to anyone listening, don't hesitate to take that first step. You never know where it might lead, and you might end up getting a new friendship out of it. So, all right, Jocelyn, let's jump in. I want to start with your career journey. So far, it's led you here to Koru as head of people and operations. What inspired your path into this role? Like, how did that all happen?
I won't go into the nitty gritty details, but I will say it started in grade 8, believe it or not.
Wow.
I was one of those unusual children who kind of knew what they wanted to do at that age, which saying that out loud, I'm fully aware sounds bizarre, but at that age wanted to be a psychologist. I was so deeply fascinated by what motivates people to do the things that they do. We could probably have a different podcast about why I was curious about that, but we'll leave it there for now. And at that age, as I say, I decided that's what I wanted to do. Fast forward to going to university, I went to Guelph University and I started my undergrad in psychology. And it took about one semester of school to realize that was not, in fact, the path for me. And so I changed my undergrad and wanted to still kind of do some psychology classes and moved into the Bachelor of Commerce program and specialized in human resources management. So I would say that in a lot of ways, my career journey has been quite linear in that I studied HR and that has been my path since I graduated. But, you know, I think a lot about that, like, kind of initial curiosity of why people do the things they do. And I would say that that still is rooted in kind of my work today. But in terms of kind of where things went after university, I did take a little bit of an HR break. I moved to South Korea after graduation. I taught English as a second language for about a year and a half.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So I would say that that kind of experience with facilitation, really kind of honing my communication skills, certainly with my kind of audience at that time being kindergartners through to 16-year-olds who were learning English as a second language, I think that that is still a skill that I utilize on a day-to-day basis in my work. Obviously, it afforded me an opportunity to travel and earn money. So I traveled a lot of Asia, ended up going to most Southeast Asian countries, which back in the day when there were no smartphones, I was traveling with my Lonely Planet books that were weighing down my backpack. And so that was my first real big trip on a shoestring budget, which again, I think that having to kind of go through that traveling and really kind of navigate difficult situations without access to technology to answer all your questions, again, was, you know, a real life skill to sort of pick up at that time. And then I moved to the UK, which was a bit of a surprise. I never saw myself moving there. So I really kind of jumped into that opportunity, again, not really knowing where that was going to lead. And the UK was where I actually had my first proper HR job. So that was probably my first experience with building something from the ground up. For some reason, I was trusted to take on the HR function in a law firm, not knowing anything about UK legislation, not having done that before. But I think they saw that I was really curious, loved to learn. And that really was kind of the drive to kind of do my best work in that role. So I spent about 5 years in the UK, and then I moved back to Canada, to Toronto in 2013 and started my career here. So it's been pretty much HR focused since then, jumped around from industry to industry. So I always call myself industry agnostic. And most recently, I've ended up at Koru, and I've been there for the last 2+ years as their head of people and operations. So really, it's my first foray in the tech industry. And it's just been a wonderful kind of building role for me. Again, that theme of building has definitely kind of come up a lot in my career.
Okay, folks. So as I was saying,
questions.
Yeah, I know, right, Al? And I was going to say, this is why you need to put yourself out there and meet people. Because I know Jocelyn, I've met with her a couple of times, we've had some good conversations, but I just learned a ton more about you that I didn't know, which is amazing. And I like to call myself an adventurer, but I am such a novice compared to you, what you just said. So I want to go back to, though, when you said, you know, you're 8 years old, you wanted to go into psychology, and you were very curious. And it seems to me that that curiosity has really served you well, not only in your personal life, but in your business career too, because it took you through all your travels all through Asia. Like, that's amazing. Like, not, you were the first person out of, you know, 220 odd episodes to talk about something like that. Like, that's incredible that you've done that. Is that curiosity of 8-year old Jocelyn, and obviously it's been there throughout your career, where you've landed now, are you still as passionate about that curiosity and learning? Are you still where, or is that fading over time? I'm curious.
No, it is just as present as it's always been. I kind of put, we'll say, quote unquote, pen to paper a few years ago, where I wrote down kind of my values, my personal values and my professional values. And curiosity was just the very clear kind of number one value for me that I definitely center myself on. What I will say is that throughout my career and even my personal life, when I see that curiosity maybe fading a little bit, it's almost that signal that, okay, it's time to do something different. You know, yeah. So I almost use it a bit as a guiding light in a way.
Yeah.
And so it's probably very annoying for people around me because I ask a lot of questions, share a lot of things that I'm reading or I find interesting. But yeah, it's still there.
So I think curiosity is going to be the word of the day then. And I do want to go back to something you said earlier about when you started university and that you're pretty passionate about what you thought you were pretty passionate about. But after the first semester, you realized that wasn't the path for you. What happened?
Yeah, I think about that a lot, actually, because put simply, I think, and it could have been a timing thing, but I just didn't find my instructors inspiring, you know, and I sort of had this expectation in my head that I would go off to university and I would just be ignited with this kind of, like, we'll use the word curiosity, but also excitement around this sort of I guess, theoretical thing I had in my head, and that in practice I would be aligned to that, just was not the case. And I thought to myself, I was like, I can give this a bit more time, or I can make this decision early enough on that I'm not then going to have to pay all this extra money to start another undergrad. And I was paying for my own undergrad. So I think I had a lot of skin in the game. You know, I was like financially motivated to make a decision. And HR was something I knew nothing about. I sat down with an advisor and I asked about HR, and I could see that these psych courses were still threaded through that discipline. And I was like, okay, I think that makes sense for me. So yeah, it was probably the facilitators, to be honest, that they weren't connecting with me.
Yeah. I'd love to dive down, and we probably don't have enough time to talk about it here, but I'd love to dive down more into your adventures too, because I did something very similar in university, backpacked around Europe. And I have too thought, even just, you know, recently, how did we survive? I went for 77 days without, I think I called my parents three times in that time. Like, now you reach out, you know, every day to your kids, right? And they kind of had to trust you that things were okay. And now you can just look at a Google map and know exactly where you're going. And like you said,
don't forget about the Instagram posts, Al. You gotta have your Instagram posts now too.
Exactly. Let everyone know exactly where you are. But yeah, it's really interesting the way to think that how you had to survive, really.
Yeah.
And what you learned from it. I think that's the biggest thing, like you said. So let's continue down the path of curiosity. So maybe you can talk about, as in your role right now, what challenges or trends in the workplace are sparking your curiosity, and how are they influencing your approach at your workplace?
I'll probably start by kind of sharing a bit of the kind of what I'm curious about, and then follow up with the why. I've found myself working in organizations that are smaller in size over kind of the last 5 years. And I think ultimately the motivation there is that it affords me an opportunity to connect with the team on a more kind of human level. Individually, I can connect with people, I can have conversations, and there's the space to do that just because there's a smaller size team. And I think that for me, it's really kind of those connections that allow me the opportunity to kind of make impact on their day-to-day and sort of foster a work environment that creates the conditions for them to do their best work every day. So I think my curiosity on a micro level, we'll say, is that, is really just kind of what it is I can do to create this employee experience that unlocks their best work. That for me at a micro level is really, really exciting and motivating. I think at a macro level, when I kind of take a step back and look at the tech industry, we'll say, or even just kind of the workplace, the future of work, we'll call it, I'm so curious about this point in time where we have accelerated progress, certainly as a result of COVID-19 and the impact that's had on the workplace, but also this like collision of so many generations in the workplace at the same time. I try not to like make generational generalizations, but I've noticed, you know, that there is certainly evidence-based research that I'm keeping in tune to that, like there's very distinct needs of these generations. And so as an HR practitioner, I'm keeping an eye on that. And I think it's that for me in particular, that's like really, really interesting. Our team is quite young. I would say on average, we have kind of mostly millennials and of the younger end of millennial. But we certainly do have some folks that are newly graduating that are joining our team, and they have fully distinct needs that are different from the millennial generations. So those are the things for me that I think are keeping me most curious.
Maybe I'm making too much of a jump here, but you talked about in your first year at university that your facilitators just, they didn't inspire you. Like they didn't live up to your expectations maybe, but there wasn't that spark there. Do you think maybe that's had any influence in what you are doing now in almost in the sense of what not to do? Like, I do remember back I got into coaching, and the first coaching role I had was as an assistant. And I think the most I took away from that was what not to do as a coach. And when I became a coach later, because I just didn't agree with how that coach ran things. And so I'm just wondering, I'm curious if you think, looking back, that may have had an influence in how you deal with people now.
Yeah, I mean, it probably has, right? Like, I think that I probably agonize over this, but just that realization that if you take a public institution like a university, I fully appreciate they can't cater the curriculum for each and every person. And perhaps those facilitators really worked for somebody else, but obviously didn't work for me. So I think where you do have that flexibility and you do have the space to sort of cater the way in which you're designing, say, a training program or a piece of communication for your team, if you can be flexible and you can cater it to your audience, especially if you are connected with your audience, so like our team in this instance, then I take that on as my responsibility to do that, because I know that when you don't get it right, what the kind of outcome can be, right? And maybe it is that someone leaves your organization, you know, and sort of likening that to me leaving my psychology degree. So Right. Yeah, I do think about that. And the other thing, and I had this conversation with a peer recently, is that you can have the greatest thing to say in the world, but if you're not saying it in a way that resonates with your audience, or you're not saying it in a way that engages your audience, it really doesn't matter what you're saying. And so I think about that importance of facilitation and of communication in trying to drive change or deploy a new people program. So yeah, I think it has influenced how I do my work today.
Jocelyn, can we take a swing over to workplace culture, because that's a big part of my world in the employee benefit space. And I'm always curious to talk to curiosity. There it is again, the word of the day for this podcast. But I wanted to talk to you about, and we've talked about this briefly offline, and I'd be curious to if we could expand on it and share this with the audience. But what does an intentional and positive workplace culture mean to you? And then as a follow-up to that, how do you go about building that within an organization?
It's a big question, but it's a really good question. For me, it's kind of like there's like two things happening when you're building an intentional culture. So one, of course, I think it's very important for the leaders of the organization to be clear on the culture they would like to foster. So I think that that's one thing. And I think in order for it to be intentional and, say, long lasting, it absolutely needs to take into consideration the employee voice, the lived experience. What is it like for you to come into this workplace every day and really kind of channeling that into the sort of fostering of your company culture? I do believe that cultures that, and I don't want to say fail, but perhaps cultures that are just not very apparent are usually lacking in one of those two areas. Because I've seen it happen where you can almost swing too much to the side where the employee voice is solely shaping the culture. And then the other side where it's purely leadership that thinks they're shaping culture. And so I think it's the blend of those two things. And with the employee voice piece, and again, folks in my team who will listen to this, they'll know I am obsessed with gathering feedback and doing something with it. And so I think it's really just like leveraging feedback touch points to also be aware of kind of how your culture is landing with your team and maybe modifying it or shaping it differently based on sort of the lived experience of the team. So for me, it's really just don't get too comfortable. You just can't get too comfortable. And I think in the tech world, the culture that you shape and set out with when you're in your growth stage versus later stage, to me, can be two very different things. So it's important to not get too complacent.
You know, when I'm approaching a company, one of the things I'll do is I'll go on their website and I'll look in the About Us section and then look at values, because we spend a lot of time, we don't call them values, but that's what they are. We call them our guiding principles. In your view, and this is, again, I'm asking genuinely because I'm curious, in your view, Are companies' values or guiding principles helping to shape that corporate culture? Or do you see it as, hey, yes, we put some words on a page because it looks great on the website and we're throwing in a drawer? Because I think our experience, and we can share after you answer, our experience has been pretty positive about here are our guiding principles, here's what we're going to live by. And again, to your point, part of that is that employee experience when they're coming to work and feeling those values and seeing other people living those. So I'm just, from your standpoint, I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge supporter of company values, huge supporter. However, I think the success of company values is kind of like what you've touched upon, which is like, how are you bringing those to life on a day-to-day basis?
Exactly, yeah.
Because I think we've all been part of organizations where the company values are blasted on the website, they're blasted on a wall when you walk in, but you're kind of like, okay, they're collecting dust and nothing's actually happening with them. And so for me, it really is that bringing to life and really threading those values through your people programs and really kind of empowering the team also to have respectful conversations when maybe people aren't living those values, but also praising their peers when they are living those values. So that's something we've spent a lot of time on at Koru, where we've got a strong set of values and we've really made a point to kind of collaboratively define one, what they mean, but then also like, what does it look like when people are living those values in their day-to-day? So those behaviors and shaping our people programs like peer-to-peer recognition and things like that around them. So it's really kind of those two things that I think are kind of like the only way I see company values actually doing the thing you want them to do.
Jocelyn, maybe we could switch gears a little bit and hear a little bit more about your story. Can you talk about a challenging situation that you've come across in your career? Talk about one of those situations and maybe what you learned from it.
I feel like through the years, there have been a number of challenging situations. And I don't know if I have any one specific situation to provide. I mean, I once worked in a trucking company, and I will say it was kind of nearly 2 years I worked there, and I learned a lot. It was very fast moving. Lots of challenging situations definitely arose in that workplace. I'd say it expedited my gathering of HR tools in my toolbox, so to speak. I've dealt with situations very early on in my HR career where we had employee deaths in the line of work. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's big stuff, right? Big, big stuff that you could do a lot of training on the topic, but you're never going to be prepared for what that actually is in sort of real time and the profound impact that can have on you. But, you know, I think the thing, and this is a very general answer, I think for me, as somebody who really does love connecting with individuals, I think the biggest thing has always just been, don't ever make assumptions about what another person's going through. And so, you know, I think it's very easy to, in HR, when there's a performance issue or there's a people challenge of some sort, to go right to the policy, right to the process. And I think now I always take that step back to really kind of empathize and just better understand all the other things that could be going on in that person's world that could actually be leading to this organizational issue you might have in front of you. So I think it's really that collection of more challenging things through the years, through my career, that's really kind of given me that perspective with kind of how I show up today.
So a couple things there. I love the way that you worked the way expedited into your description about a trucking company. That was fantastic.
That was good. Yeah.
We even planned that.
But I'm also curious about what you just said at the end, and certainly understand, yes, we never really understand what other people are going through and what their situation is. So yes, you need to be aware of it, but how do you then come up with a solution where you say, yes, I understand what you're going through and thanks for sharing that, but at the same time, we do have to get the job done, if you will. You know what I mean? Like there has to be a balance there. So how do you go about approaching that?
I think the first step is just creating the kind of conditions that will allow for an honest conversation to take place where somebody feels the safety and security to share. But I hear you, because I think it is that balance, right? And that honestly is the trickiest part of the kind of people or HR profession is that constant balance, right? Mm-hmm. Which is like you've got human and business, and they're sometimes at odds, they're sometimes not. So I think for me, it's really just hearing the person out. That's the first step, of course. And then I think just sort of being clear on the option to provide support and accommodation if needed, just kind of parking that there and being clear that that opportunity is available, but also just very much centering it on like what support and additional resources are needed from the organization. So really just that extension of like, we're here to support if needed. And then I think going back to your point about at the end of the day, all things considered, there's still a responsibility to kind of, as you say, get the job done, right? So I think it's really that balance of like empathy and sort of listening and offering that support and guidance, but then also what can seem kind of contradictory is that reminder of like, we do need to get the job done. So I've actually found that that kind of framing of these more difficult conversations can work quite well. But you also kind of have to have your company process and whatnot documented that you're able to kind of refer to so that there is no ambiguity and that people don't just think it's, oh, Jocelyn's way of doing things. So yeah.
No, that's great advice. And I'm sure it's something that obviously something we come across and something that I'm sure you know, everyone's going to come across on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Jocelyn, I'm really enjoying this conversation. I'm learning things that I didn't know about you. So this is great as we continue our journey of friendship. You know, we'll get to know each other even better. But at this point in your career and life, how do you define success at this point?
Yeah, I mean, and you've caught me in a very introspective week. I've had a birthday this week and I tend to get very...
Happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Thank you. I tend to get, I think as the kids say, in my feelings a bit. And, you know, I think about legacy, right? I think about when I'm no longer on this planet, like how will I be remembered? And in one way, it's uncomfortable to share that because it seems like it's very ego-centered. But I think for me, success, and it's in my professional life, but also my personal life, is really about knowing that I did everything I could do to be that person for someone who I maybe needed at one point in my life. And that has really kind of led me to find the little moments in my day-to-day role where no question is too big or small, and just really showing up for people. Because if they're coming to me and they need something, regardless of what it is, I think it can be brave to ask some questions to people sometimes. And so really just recognizing that I've needed things from people throughout my time. And so really just continuing to be that person and showing up. And my kind of extracurriculars, we'll call it. I do mentor through an organization called GEM eGirls Mentorship. So I mentor a grade 11 student, and I joined the organization because when I was in high school, I really would have loved to have a sounding board or somebody who I could go to that wasn't my mom or wasn't my aunt. You know, just somebody I could speak honestly with and get guidance from. So again, just going back to my earlier statement, it's really, I think just for me, success is just being that person for someone who I maybe needed at some point in my life.
I love that answer. And as you're speaking about it, I'm thinking how many of us out there, because me included, would have loved to have had someone, because you know, when you're younger, like, what do your parents know? Hey, you know, you find out later they actually knew quite a bit. But at the time, there's no one else to speak to. And even your friends who are in the same boat as you, it would have been nice if there were some people. So it's good to know that people like yourself are showing up for other people. And you having the birthday this week and feeling a little more introspective is actually a perfect segue to Al's signature question. So Al, I'll let you take it away.
Yeah, and I love that you, again, used the word legacy in your last answer, because that's what we're going to talk about a little bit. So there is a saying that a society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So maybe in your role at Koru, or it could be in your personal life too, what proverbial trees are you planting today to create a lasting impact?
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about this, because to your point, with it being a birthday week, being a bit more introspective, thinking about legacy and all of that, I think ahead on my kind of like, let's say next 40 or so years of my life, if I'm lucky. And I think it really is about leading with kindness and really, really hearing people. I think for me, showing up, like really centering myself on those two things, whether it's at Koru, whether it is in my personal life, knowing how impactful that can be for another person. You know, I think that that's for me, the sort of trees that I'm planting. And when I say trees I'm planting, I'm just hoping that it can maybe, I guess, influence those around me to kind of conduct themselves in that way. I don't know if I have that much influence, but I know I've been influenced by other people and how they show up. And so I think that that really is it for me. It seems very simple. I don't think it's the easiest thing to do, though, to lead with kindness, because it's very easy, especially in Toronto, when you're walking to work and everyone's on their phone and they're in your way. I'm not thinking too kindly, but I take a step back and I'm like, well, the fact that I can walk to work on a day-to-day basis is a pretty wonderful thing. So it's really that kind of mindful moment of recentering on that too, that I think is important.
Yeah, and the fact that you brought up a very interesting thing there, you said, you have to actually work at kindness, right? If it were easy, anyone could do it, right? So the fact that you do have to expend some effort on it, that makes it that much more important.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And I will share with you, just from my own experience, you were definitely having a positive experience on people, because I have had a very positive experience getting to know you. So for listeners who are interested in learning more about you and what you're doing at Koru, what's the best way to reach out?
LinkedIn is the best way to connect with me. And I always love connecting with new folks, whether they're HR leaders or not, always happy to chat.
Well, this has been amazing, Jocelyn. That does it for today's episode. Al and I really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for us, please feel free to give us a call or by joining the conversation on LinkedIn. Man, we saw it clearly here today. Success leaves clues, my friends. We'll see you next time.